My daughter Kaylee, who was married just this last summer in July, was given as a gift, along with her partner Nathan, a DNA testing kit. As informed as our lives are today, we resort to DNA to help us trace our actual ancestry because many of us have forgotten who we really are, and we are specifically forgotten sooner than we care to think about after our deaths. Kaylee and Nathan's ancestry charts were on target to what families had claimed. Nathan's ancestors hail from a line of Jews from Russia and Eastern Europe, and Kaylee is a North European mutt, that's her word. And she wrote me that she is whiter in her background than anyone would want to be. The sun was a rarity for my ancestors. On my side of the family, we hail from Ireland and all lands north and east of there. My ancestors probably left Finland and Norway and all places bitterly cold and barren and headed across Scotland and Ireland. And we know that they took a boat from there, from Ireland, landing in Richmond, Virginia. Now, I say Norway because I have a medically established cholesterol pattern that meets that of most Norwegian men. The best suspect is that they're However, by the time my relatives got to Virginia, there was just too much sun and heat and humidity for all those Norwegian types. And even more probable still was that land in northwestern territories of Indiana was probably cheaper, more fertile, more open to religious freedom. Virginia was an Anglican colony. Most of the colonies were founded according to religious groups. And the Skiles clan was decidedly Amish, Mennonite, Brethren, Baptist, obnoxious types that would have found Anglican liturgy as practically Catholic and beyond which they could find tolerable. So it's interesting for me to be a child of an Amish Mennonite brother and father who ended up mating with an Irish Roman Catholic woman. My family history, however, goes back by names only to about 1830. So that's about, what, 190 years worth? This morning's story from the book of Exodus is about a man who probably lived around the year 1250 BCE, before the current era. The story of Moses, therefore, is about 3,000 years old. The Jews were amongst the very first people to actually write things down, religiously speaking, in a book. What started out as an oral history storytelling system began to get written down some 200 or 300 years after Moses. That's a long time. But when it comes to ancient history, our Jewish foreparents did an absolutely excellent job of remembering and writing about it. So Moses was on a run. He was on a run from his former life in Egypt. Most of us can probably relate to running from something. He had gone from privilege to that of being a criminal. He killed an Egyptian who was beating a Jewish slave, and out into the desert into which he ran. He got married. He was leading a good life, tending herds of whatever. It was there in his hiding from his former life that God finally grabbed the attention of Moses. And the rabbis tell a story about why the bush was burning and not consumed by fire. They said that it was because it needed to burn so long because Moses just wouldn't notice it for the longest time. Sound familiar? Seriously, friends. Who really wants to notice God face to face? It often seems to be part of being human to avoid ultimate realities for as long as possible. In the last 5 years, there have been 3 floods in Houston, Texas that have been named 500-year events. The last one, Hurricane Harvey, has now been upgraded or downgraded, I don't know, to a 1,000-year event. No! How deceptive it is to name it that way. It is a once-in-every-3-year event if we listen to the science and the pragmatic portrayals of climate change knowledge. How many times does it have to flood before we see the face of reality? How much of Antarctica has to melt into the sea? How many people must die? Last week, while Harvey was flooding Texas and Louisiana, in Bangladesh, in southern India, over 1,000 people were killed in massive rains and flooding. How easy it is to miss something metaphorically speaking, like a burning bush. Something spectacularly bad happening and rehappening, such as a massive flood. We can no longer be surprised that only one extended family made it into Noah's Ark. Ask any addict or anyone who has or is living with an addict, and you will learn that the addiction has been present for years before the addict or those who live with the addict finally see the metaphoric light that has been burning for years, right in front of our eyes. How true is that famous phrase that denial is more than just a river in Egypt? The story of all that is holy, calling Moses out of his reluctance to lead a people out of oppression, is a sacred story in our Jewish, Muslim, and Christian faith traditions. Its application can be political, social, national, international, or personal. It's a story that seeks to give hope. Hope in the face of denials of any kind, whether it be that one is living with a sexual addict, an alcoholic, a drugged and depressed person, a culture of climate change deniers, or working in an office with a bully as a boss. We are called forth by God to not just to do it alone, but to realize that all are, God is one with us, a holy partner with us, and that God envisions with us, gets down with us, and never ever stops breathing new hope, new energy, new possibilities, even when the waters of life rise this deep. I would ask those of us who find little to appreciate in these ancient Hebrew texts to dare notice that in this story there is a theological and religious theme that is entering the narrative where God is wholly present, responsive, and that most likely that there is no ground that is not holy ground. All places are in truth thin places. And occasionally, for whatever reason, we finally stop to notice God's presence and God speaking. I will conjecture that God is speaking to all of us, all others as well, 100% of the time, and that it is rare. It is, in fact, nearly a miracle that we pause to listen and see. What some would call a miracle that God is speaking, I have a tendency to call a common occurrence. We are always on common holy ground. And 99.9% of the time, it's not in church, but nearly anywhere else that we have those encounters with God. I personally think that it's very sad that we don't encounter God more often in church, but we're working on that. Most of the time in our 24/7, 365 lives lived with more fullness than is necessarily good for our health, we know we fail to see beauty, wonder, love right where we are. Spiritual formation is about taking the time to pause, notice, open, yield, and stretch, and then respond to holiness that is indeed everywhere. In that light, we have started this month such wonderful and widely diverse options for our spiritual growth. Some of us find spiritual growth learning new things in our heads. Others of us need to quiet ourselves, stretch our bodies, and to look deep within before throwing ourselves more meaningfully out into the rest of the world. However, it is that That sentence I wrote makes no sense. We are simply providing a host of good options. We have the experiential class that is going to be led by Yu Shin, and he's going to be standing out here by the door today, so please stop by and just talk to him. The discipleship class being led by Sam. There's a class on mercy, which I need a lot of, being led by Maureen. Derek and I have a class on Tuesday mornings at from 10 to 11:30, that is for spiritually intellectual heretics. And that includes, on most days, food that is not good for you either. We're holistic. We poison our brains and our bodies all at the same time. The God that Moses encounters is personal, dynamic, changing, and demanding. Demanding. God knows what's going on in the world and wants to liberate the Hebrews from captivity. God has heard the Hebrews' prayers. God has felt their pain. God wants to respond. God is intimate, not aloof. God is lively and dialogical, not unchanging and impassive. God is passionate and receives as well as gives. In contrast to Aristotle's what? Unmoved mover, process theology, my favorite, argues that God is the most moved mover ever. The one to whom all hearts are open and the one who registers intimately the pain and the joy of the world. So what kind of world is God experiencing now? What kind of world are we giving God? The heart of ethics is theistic. Loving the Creator. Loving the Creator by loving the creatures. Giving God a beautiful rather than ugly world. An important part of all this is God needs Moses. And of course, by extension, God needs you. God has power. The power, if you will, to sustain a universe and guide all the historical process. But at the micro level of cells, souls, and communities, God is dependent on human agency. God is dependent on you, on me. God is sending Moses as an emissary and as a revelation. The power of God to liberate. Divine power is real, but it is also contextual and contingent and intimately connected to human openness and decision-making. Would God have been able to liberate the Hebrew people without the commitment of Moses? We are not stronger than God, but our efforts can be the tipping point. Our efforts, your efforts, my efforts, can be the tipping point in a lively, interdependent universe. We are, as Jewish mysticism affirms, called to be God's partners in healing the world. I think sacrifice, as terrible as that word is often made to be out to be, sacrificial living is essential to our faith journey. And it entails, at the end of the day, gain, not loss. When the small self lets go of control and pauses long enough to listen to divine wisdom, a new and larger self is born, one that participates in everlasting life and is able to let go, knowing the wonders God desires for all of us. It is from large-souled living where we become Mahatmas, little Christs, who challenge injustice, racism, violence, with a spirit of peace and reconciliation. God is constantly moving in all of our lives. We can align ourselves with God's movements by commitment to self-aware practices of faith. Our openness to God awakens us to burning bushes on every street corner and a healing in absolutely every encounter that we have.